Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 89 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off his three-episode stint is Joe Amadei, the CEO of Virtual Films and a aspiring film buff.
Thank you very much. This has been great, by the way. This has been fun. This has been, revisiting, we've done classic movies before, but this is the classic television series. And it's, again, you go back to revisit these things, these films that meant a lot to you, or even in some cases, films that may not have meant a lot to me when I first saw them. But in revisiting them, and sometimes minute by minute, there's an appreciation that I've garnered for some of this product that you've been putting on display.
I am so happy to hear that. See, just hearing that from you just warms my heart.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe. No, I mean it truly means a lot. Hearing someone like you with your vast experience with movies to say that it means
thank
a
you.
Lot. It really does.
Thank you.
So thank you. All right, so episode 89 begins with Dacro giving out orders and ends with Luz watching through the debris. So we ended things yesterday with Dacro trying to do his best to bandage up both Joe and Garnier.
Yes.
And then Doc turns to Garnier and goes, "Bill, you're going first." He goes, "Whatever you say, Doc. Whatever you say."
Yeah.
And Doc then motions for the, there's some stretcher bearers and other medics that show up. And he points to Garnier and he goes, "Over here, take this man." Now, when the fact that Doc Rowe is telling them to take Garnier first means that Garnier is injured much worse.
Yes, it does.
That's what they're telling us here.
That's what they're telling us, yeah.
It's a
but he's alive. But he's alive.
Correct. He's alive. But in a non-subtle way, he's basically saying, "You take this guy first because his injury is more severe."
And yes, I felt the same way. And at the same time, you're saying, how could it possibly be more severe than what I've been looking at for the past 2 or 3 minutes? A leg being off and the blood and the gore and the, so how could Bill be worse than that?
Yeah, and I think that the answer is I mean, we can see it in the, after like 5 seconds of the shot when the stretcher bearer is showing up, you see that his leg is still attached.
Yes.
But it's been decimated. So it's like still hanging, it's still connected. So, that already will say something.
Yeah.
So I wanted to just take a quick break and read from the book, which talks about what happens here.
Go ahead.
So it's on page 163. Oh, sorry, it starts on starts at the end of 162. So Sergeant Joe Toy was in the open, shouting orders to his men to take cover. "They always said, if you can hear the shells, you'll be okay," he recalled. "I did not hear the shell. It exploded just above him. Shrapnel all but tore off his right leg and hit him in the stomach, chest, and both arms. The shrapnel in his chest area was later removed by two separate operations, taking it out from the back." Wow. I mean, that's just amazing. "As suddenly as it began, the shelling stopped. It had been the worst shelling Easy had endured in the war. All through the woods, men were calling out for a medic. Lipton ran back to his foxhole to get his rifle, expecting an infantry attack. He heard someone moaning in the next foxhole. A tree, 16 inches in diameter, had fallen over it. Lipton tried to remove the tree, but could not. Help arrived. The men dug around the tree, and Private Shep Howell came out grinning." You see, in the book, it's Shep that they, Babe, not Babe, but, because we don't know who Shep is, they decided to give us a character we knew. "Toy yelled for help. He wanted someone to drag him into his foxhole. Sergeant Garnier got to him first and began dragging him over the ground. The shelling resumed. The Germans had planned well. As they anticipated, the pause had brought men out of the foxholes to help the wounded. A shell burst over Garnier's head. Shrapnel tore into his right leg, mangling it. After a few minutes, the shelling ceased." Lipton came out of his foxhole. Tenandyke called out to him. I can still hear him with that deep voice of his, Lipton recalls. He was about 25 yards away without a helmet or a weapon. Sergeant Lipton yelled at me, "You get things organized here, and I'll go for help." And with that, he left. Lipton began rounding up the men who had not been hit. Some of them were close to breaking. Some were amazingly calm. He sent some to tend to the wounded, others to organize to retrieve the infantry, to receive the infantry attack he was sure was coming. Then he went to check on Garnier and Toy. Lipton looked down at Garnier. Garnier looked up and said, "Lip, they got Garnier this time." Malarkey joined them. Garnier and Toy, as he recalled, were conscious and calm. No screaming or yelling. Joe said, "Give me a cigarette, Malark." And I lit a cigarette for him. There was a pause in our interview. I urged him to go on. "I don't want to talk about it," Malarkey said. Another pause, and then he continued. Joe smoked, looked at me, and said, "Jesus, Malark, what does a man have to do to get killed around here?" Stretcher bearers got to Garnier first. As he was being carried away, he called out the Toy. "I told you I'd get back to the States before you." So, you know, I like the way they took that and you know, played with it a little bit, you know, yep. As we talked about yesterday and stuff like that. I think cinematically, the way that they show it to us here is more interesting than the way it's told in the book.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what we were talking about yesterday, that nothing is 100% truth. You know, so they play around with it a little bit here and stuff like that. But, I mean, just the one thing that they can tell us here in the book that we can't see in the series is how this affected Malarkey. You know, just by the fact that Malarkey, in the middle of the interview, had to stop because, you know, he said, "Nah, I don't want to talk about it anymore." Because to see two of your friends this way, you know. And then it continues a little bit, and we'll talk about Compton. It says, "Lieutenant Buck Compton commanded 2nd Platoon. He was very close to his men, too close in the opinion of some of the officers. Compton was a close friend of mine," Malarkey said. "He didn't like the status symbol in the Army. He was more friendly with enlisted men than he ever was with officers. He was especially close to Garnier and Toy. When he came out of his foxhole, Compton saw carnage all around him. The nearest wounded were his friends, Garnier and Toy, their legs dangling from their bodies, their blood turning the snow bright red all around them. Compton started running to the rear, shouting for medics or help of some kind. He finally calmed down at the aid station. It was found he had a severe case of trench foot. He was evacuated." Now, that's all they say here. You know, and it's very interesting because I've heard that Compton himself was not happy about the way they portrayed him in this particular scene.
Okay.
Because, you know, they make it seem as if we'll talk about it over the next 5 minutes, but they make it seem as if Buck was evacuated because of what he saw, not necessarily because of the trench foot. And he was adamant about the fact that he was, you know, taken off the line because of his trench foot, not because.
Well, yeah, I mean, this 5 minutes sees him in, you know.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they show him. Well, again, we'll talk about it shortly.
Yeah.
But the idea.
He sees Joe and Bill,
mm-hmm.
and he's yelling for medic. But then I think the next time we see him is not for another minute or two.
That's right. Well, we'll see him a little bit later.
Right. So he's off. He's out of the picture right now.
Yeah. Exactly. But okay, so we're now back with and I also find it interesting that in the book they say that Garnier was evacuated first because they just got to him first. It wasn't it wasn't because he was necessarily in a more severe,
any more danger than Joe.
That's right. You know, so again, but I do like the way that they changed that here a little bit. You know, it gives more weight to this whole scene, because it's also telling us that, you know, Garnier, who did something very heroic to go and try and save his friend, put himself in more danger, and again was, according to the miniseries, he was wounded more severely.
Yeah.
And, you know, as they're taking him out on the stretcher, so Garnier then goes, "Hey, Lip, they got old Garnier this time." And the medic goes, "We got you, soldier." He goes, "Ah," he goes, "just lie back, take it easy." And as the stretcher passes by Joe Toy, he goes, "Hey, Joe, I told you I'd beat you back to the States," which goes back to the line we talked about yesterday. So it's only a line that very close friends would be able to say to one another, you know, in this type of situation. So
yeah, it's a well-written line.
Yes. Well, according to the book, you know, it Garnier really said it. So that's even better. You know, it's not a well-written line. It's a well-spoken line that they remembered. You know, they remembered.
It's a Philly thing.
Transcribed. Is it? Are you saying it's a Philly thing or?
Oh, it's a Philly thing of being like that. Yeah, a South Philly thing in particular, where they're from. You know, you buck up, man.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Definitely makes sense. And then Luz looks at Lip and goes, "Hey, Lip." He goes. Lip then turns to him and goes, "How's Buck?" And we see that Luz has, reached the point, and he sees what basically has happened to both Garnier and Toy, and he's completely in shock. And Lip, tries to snap him out of it and goes, "Luz, how's Buck?" He goes, he's fine. He goes, "You sure?" Yeah, he's fine. I think you should probably go talk to him now. And then we get a shot of Buck sitting, on a tree branch, just crying, basically. So right. I think that might be the actual moment that the real Buck Covington did not like, that they showed that, you know.
Right.
But, which, again, is understandable if that really didn't happen, you know.
Yeah, without a doubt. If it didn't happen, then it's really understandable. Right.
Do you know anything about the real Buck Covington?
No, just what I briefly read.
Did you know that he was the lead prosecutor with Sirhan Sirhan?
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how about that?
Mm-hmm. And then Lip walks over towards where Buck is. And Luz just looks down at them taking care of Joe and walks away. And then we can hear the narration once again from Lip. And this is, as Lip is talking, trying to talk to Buck, and Buck turns away. He, like, doesn't want to talk to him.
Right.
And the narration says, "Some say Buck changed after he was shot in Holland. Maybe. Yeah. But I know something happened to him." Yeah. But I know something happened to him when he saw Toy and Garnier on the ground. And then the shot changes, and we see an ambulance is moving towards a MASH tent, if you want to call it that. I don't know if they I don't know if they refer to them as MASH in during World War II, but in Korea, yes. But we see what looks like medics and doctors that are all moving around there. And, we continue with the narration, and we hear on the report, it said Compton was being taken off the line because of a bad case of trench foot. Didn't say anything about him losing his friends. Buck was a great combat leader. And we see, Buck lying on a cot, basically curled up, trying to stay away. The shot pans through and sees the doctor doing surgery on someone, like, in the middle of his chest. Somebody looks like he came out of Alien or something like that, with the way that's shown. But again, it's to try to be as realistic here as possible. And we see a bunch of other guys, either sitting or lying on cots. And then we see that Buck looks like he's in a complete daze.
He's totally shell. He's totally shell shocked. Totally. I mean, it's only a few minutes, or maybe it's 15 minutes after what happened with Bill and Joe.
I would say it's probably even longer after that.
Yeah, it's probably even longer. But again, he is He has snapped. His brain cannot take, you know, what he saw. And he's severely suffering from it at this point.
Mm-hmm. And the narration continues. He was wounded in Normandy and again in Holland. He received the Silver Star for his part in taking out those German guns on D-Day. He took everything the Krauts could throw at him, time and again. And then we see Malarkey show up at the tent. And he goes, Lieutenant Compton? And then we see Malarkey sitting next to Compton, reading letters to him. And he goes, UCLA did not make the Rose Bowl this winter, probably because you weren't there. Yeah. I'm sure you're teaching all of your young soldiers the joy you have of the sport. Gosh, how we all know what an exciting young man you are, and how your heart and love. And then like he stops Malarkey and pushes his hand away. He doesn't want to read anymore. I mean, Compton was an All-American both baseball and football player at UCLA. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a catcher, which helped him. You know, back in the scene at Breaking Court, you know, where he actually threw a grenade that exploded on impact on one of the Germans' heads. You know, and they say it was because he was such a good catcher that he was able to make the throw to second base. So he was able to make that throw also.
Wow.
And, you know, and so... Again, we see the toll that is taking on this character.
And it's interesting because his character is one of the main characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of the leads. He's one of the main characters. So, and you know, this is only episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder, where is this character going to go from here?
Okay. But again, because they are basing things on points of realism, you know, if Buck was no longer there after that situation, then there's nothing for them to do with him over the next three and a half episodes anyway.
Sure, right.
Again, this is not the writer choosing that I want to keep him or I want to get rid of him.
You know, not at all.
Who pissed off the director.
Yeah.
And they decided to write him out. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then Lipton continues with his. With a narration, he goes, I guess he just couldn't take seeing his friends Toy and Garnier all torn up like that.
Yeah.
And then we see Malarkey take the letters and put them back in Buck's pocket himself. And then we get the final line from Lip's narration where he goes, no one ever thought any less of him for it. Which I think is great that they add that in there.
Me too.
Even if this didn't really happen to Buck, you know, but they did. There were guys that it did happen to. You know, so,
oh, yeah. I mean, there's thousands of guys that this happened.
For sure. For sure.
You know,
so,
and it didn't exist back then because it was never dealt with.
Well, it existed, but it wasn't called.
Well, I mean, it wasn't called named.
The same thing. Exactly.
It wasn't named. Today they have a name for it. They deal with it somewhat.
Right. I mean, now it's PTSD. But I think it was. Trying to remember what it was called. I know that in Vietnam it was called something else. Like in each war, they find a different name for it. I'm trying to remember. Maybe it was shell shock. Could it be shell shock in Vietnam? I don't remember.
I think it was shell. Yeah.
Right. So maybe now they didn't have a name at all, and then in you know, in Vietnam, it became shell shock.
Well, you know, the stories, I mean, most men came back from World War II and didn't discuss it.
Right. That's true. Again, I've talked to, you know, either World War II veterans or their children. And again, they said that Doc Rowe's grandson told me that he didn't know anything about his grandfather's, you know, what he did during the war until after his grandfather died.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't. They you know, how many stories have we read or movies we have seen where they, you know, they're going through boxes in the attic and
that's right.
Still, mm-hmm. You know,
of course.
And that's Europeans too.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. Well, some bad things.
In World War II, it was known as combat fatigue.
That's it. There you go. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It makes it sound like you're tired.
Exactly. Right. Shell shock was actually during World War I.
Aha.
Okay. So this is the way it is. In World War One, it was known as shell shock. In World War Two, it was known as battle fatigue. In Vietnam, it was known as combat fatigue, combat exhaustion, or they later called it post-Vietnam syndrome. And only in 1980 did they start referring to it as PTSD.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And at this point, we're back in the forest with these men trying to figure out how they're gonna, move on and deal with everything that just happened to them. And we see Lip get close to where Bull is, and he goes, "Hey, Bull." And he starts handing him some stuff. And we're back with narration from Lipton. He goes, "With Buck off the line, there was no longer any possible alternative to Dyke, at least none we could see." And then Bull goes, "Thanks." And he continues making his rounds, and he goes, he gets close to where Muck and Pinkala are, and he goes, "Hey, Muck, Muck." He goes, "Yes, Sergeant." He goes, "I'm looking for Lieutenant Dyke." And Muck just points, in a direction, and Lipton sees where Dyke is and starts walking towards him, and he goes, "We were stuck with Dyke, and he was off taking a walk." And then Muck says, "Sure thing." And then we hear Luz on the radio going, "Lightning Six kidnapped. Ah, yes. We've cleared all the green area between." And then Lipton continues with the narration, goes, We'd clear the woods east of Foy. So a few days later, E Company and the rest of 506 clear the woods west of Foy. There was little resistance. We see the men congregating basically.
Yep.
As one would say, they are just shooting the shit.
Yes.
And Luz just says, "You fellas know I got no reason to bullshit you, right?" And they all start laughing. He goes, "I'm not gonna bullshit you. This is what I saw. It was so unbelievable, you might not believe me." So he continues with the story, and he goes, "So you know who comes running up to Lipton? He's got no helmet, no gear, no nothing." And then Luz, as we've come to know him, at least through the miniseries, because according to his son, he didn't necessarily do imitations or mimics
Right.
or impressions. He didn't do impressions. And his he starts mimicking Dyke, and he goes, "Ah, First Sergeant Lipton, you organize things here, and I'm gonna go for help." And everyone starts laughing. And then he goes, "I need to go polish my oak leaf clusters." And one of the guys,
He's making
one
fun
of the
of
four
him.
guys that's standing there, goes, "Complete."
Right.
And then Lip, who's not that far away, calls and goes, "Hey, Luz." And Luz comes over to him and goes, "That's really good." He goes, "It's okay." And he goes, "Fellas." And Malarkey goes, "Good night. Good night, all." And they start walking away. And he goes, "Yeah, see ya, Luz. See ya, Malark." So then Luz then says to Lip, he goes, "What can I do for you, Sarge?" And he goes, "Well, two things.
Two
First,
things. Yep.
great impression.
Two things.
Great impression. Okay, sorry. Two things.
Yep.
First, great impression of Dyke.
Yeah.
You think so? I thought it was a little off." He goes, "No, you got it pretty good. Second, don't do it
Yeah, you know
anymore."
it's coming. You definitely know it's coming.
Exactly. Especially the part about what he said to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anybody any good, okay?
Yeah.
He goes, "Yeah, I gotcha."
Yeah.
He goes, "All right." Les makes a little gesture towards Lip, and Lip goes, "Wise ass."
Yeah.
Then Les walks away and flips a cigarette. And then we once again hear the shrill
Yep.
sound of incoming artillery. And someone screams, "Incoming!" And we see men running all over the place, back to this chaos. Guys jumping into foxholes, and Luz is lying on the ground trying to figure out where he needs to go. And he sees Muck and Pinkala in their foxhole, and they called him, and they're motioning to him, and they go, "Luz, Luz!" And he starts crawling towards them, and then he gets up and falls down. And they go, "Come on, hurry, Luz, Luz!" And then we hear Lip scream, "Stay down!" And they're motioning for him to come to him. They're, "Come on, get in here! Come on, come on, come on, Luz!" And it's pretty interesting. I don't know how true this is, you know, but you know, Luz does fall down a few times as he's trying to get there, meaning that that's what's basically keeping him from actually making it
right
into the
yeah
in into their foxhole.
Yeah.
And you know, as he gets really, really close, we see a huge explosion.
Huge.
Right immediately behind where Muck and Fincala are.
Yeah.
And you can tell that something basically has exploded right behind them, and something's happened. And there's tons of debris.
Yeah.
And as this debris is picked up, we just see Luz's face looking into this debris,
yeah,
trying to figure out what exactly has happened here. And you know, he doesn't know, and we're, you know, everyone's gonna have to wait until tomorrow to actually find out.
That's right.
What he finds out, you know. But yeah, it's not interesting. It's not you know, it's something that's it's going to be pretty major.
Yeah,
that we're
about to see.
Yeah. So now I will read what is mentioned in the book about this part. This was on page 166. It goes, on January 9th, the company participated in clearing operation in the woods west of Foy. Resistance was light. The company reached its objective and dug in. Suddenly, a shell burst in the trees. Then another and another. They kept coming. George Luz was caught in the open. He began racing towards his foxhole. Sergeant Muck and Private Alex Pincala called out to him to jump with them, but he decided to go to his own, and with shell bursts all around, splinters and branches and whole trees coming down, he made it and dived in. See, that's interesting. That
yeah. Wow.
And, you know, I'm not going to read the next paragraph because right. I will wait till tomorrow to read that paragraph. But again, it's really interesting how they take the story of, you know, the fact that Luz was caught in the open, and they you know, the writer decided that he's going to put it together with the story of Muck and Pincala.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting, you know, from a storytelling perspective. Joe, do you have anything else you want to say about this particular 5-minute segment?
No. The past 3 days and watching these segments that you've assigned to me have been very rewarding, and they've been very emotional. It's a hell of a 15 minutes is all I can say.
That's true. It's very true. Well, it's a hell of a miniseries.
Yep.
That's true. All right. So today's segment is called Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movie brothers.
Oh, brother, Joe, where art thou?
There you go. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Number five would be the Brothers McMullen.
I mean, I know that you have a past with Ed.
I do.
So it makes sense.
I do. It's not a bad past. It's just a past.
I didn't say the bad past. Yeah, I didn't say that.
It was good. I just saw the, a few months ago, I went and saw the sequel to the Brothers McMullen. And
what did you think of it? Exactly.
It was weak. Yeah, I hate to say it.
It wasn't as good.
Number four would be The Long Riders, about a bunch of brothers.
Yes. Bunch of real and fictional and... Well, a bunch of real brothers from different time periods.
Yes, we did. Yes. All great actors.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, we just lost one of them recently.
We did lose one of them recently. Yeah. Bobby Carradine. Yeah. Number three, City for Conquest, with James Cagney as a boxer. Arthur Kennedy is his brother, and he leaves the ring, but he has to go back in the ring. And one of the best boxing films ever made, City for Conquest. Number two, the movie I sold, The Fabulous Baker Boys.
Ooh, very good.
And number one, which could be one of the best brothers stories in any film, is On the Waterfront. Marlon Brando and Rod Steiger in the back of a cab. What else do I need to say?
Exactly. I could have been a contender.
Yep.
That's what you can say.
That's what I can say. Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, Brando couldn't remember a line to save his soul, so the lines were all over the place. And sometimes when you watch that scene now, as great as it is, you can see, you know, Brando looking. He's reading the freaking lines, you know. You can see him looking. Because the lines are plastered everywhere.
Wow.
Yeah, good film. Funny. Good brother scene.
Yep. Yeah. I gotta say once again, I'm surprised that something's missing from your list. I figured you'd have The Godfather high on your list.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, but I don't look at that film as a. I mean, they're brothers. I look at that film as a whole family.
Okay.
That, you know, that the father is the main. Even his presence in the second film, even though he's not in it, is still there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's fine. You're entitled to have your own list. That's okay. I was just saying, based on what I know of you, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Based on what I know of you, I was expecting that to be there. That's all that meant.
Right.
You know, you are allowed to make your own list. You don't need my permission or my help for that.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. All right. And now we will play for one final time, Name That World War II Movie with Joe Amedee.
Okay.
Let's spin the wheel and see if it's something that you have seen or not. Okay. My assumption is you have seen this, but we'll see if you actually remember the name of it. Okay, this is a movie that came out during COVID in 2020, and it's about a Navy commander who must lead the Allied convoy across the Atlantic and try and stay away from German submarines.
Is this the lousy Tom Hanks movie?
It is a Tom Hanks movie, yes.
Yeah, with the really bad CGI. Was it Battle? No, it's not Battleship. It's. Oh, God. Oh, I'm not going to remember the name of this movie. I didn't like it. I thought it was really bad. Probably because I wanted to put it out of my mind. It's not Battleship. Does it begin with a B?
No, it begins with a G.
Greyhound? No.
Very good. Yes, Greyhound. Yeah. Greyhound. Very good.
Yeah.
I actually liked it. Yes, the CGI was not very good, but I liked the idea of the story.
Yeah, but you know, again, I understand that, and but for me, this story was harmed by the horrible CGI, and it's just no, it took too much for me. It took too much away.
Okay, that is perfectly understandable. All right, so Joe, is there anything else you want to say about Band of Brothers in general besides the fact that you're now going to go back and rewatch it all?
No, the other thing I would say is that I, you know, if there's folks out there that are listening to this podcast that have not seen it, or even folks that have seen it, I hope they're like me and they go revisit it again. And I would also recommend both sequels. I would recommend.
Well, I wouldn't even call them sequels. That's the thing.
No, but both sequels in the
both companion, yeah. Both companion pieces.
That's even better. Both companion pieces, in particular, Masters of the Air, or the Pacific. Seek them out and watch them. These are historical documents of some really brave people that I don't know if they're like exist anymore.
Correct. Totally agree with you on that.
I really don't. So,
all right.
Other than that,
excellent.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share in this.
Joe, you know you always have a place here. All right. So would you like for one final time to tell people where they can find Joe Amade?
Joe Amade can be found at Joe at VirgilFilmsENT.com, or quite simply go to our website, VirgilFilms.com, and it'll tell you all about us.
Okay. Do you want to plug your movie or not?
Yeah, I have a movie that I actually just produced and directed a film, a documentary on a very famous hockey game that was played here in Philadelphia in 1976. The film will be released in late May. Released theatrically throughout the Philadelphia area, and then probably pop up on digital sometime in July, August. And it's called Cold War in Philly, 1976, Flyers versus Russia. Mr. Putin will not like this film. What can I say?
Well, if you're making things, if you are making things because you want Mr. Putin to like them, then then I've lost all respect for you, Joe.
Being a hockey player himself, he'll really hate it.
You never know. You never know. Yeah, just wait. You're gonna get a package in the mail from Putin.
I don't want a bag. Yeah, it would scare me. That would definitely scare me.
I can understand that. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So, Joe, thank you once again for joining me for yet another season. This has been a lot of fun talking to you about this.
Always good to catch up, my friend. You be safe. Exactly.
I will do my best with that. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, Curry!
Curry!